Back together again, you and I, in the midweek Wednesday edition, kicking off the month of June 1st, 2022, on Connecticut Today. First segment, we talked about a couple of interesting topics, including a big brawl at Walnut Beach in Milford. Also, some controversy about what was said and had to be walked back from the White House regarding guns. Also, cable news legal analyst Lee Sweal, author of A Spy in Plain Sight, the inside story of the FBI and Robert Hansen, America's Most Damaging Spy, joined us to chat about that new book. She has written 20 books. That's the newest. We'll get into this a little later, but, and I promised I would do this yesterday. I got to it a little bit later than I thought. Honestly, it had slipped my mind. But if you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/WICC600, again, facebook.com/WICC600, the Milford Police Department needs your help. Now, who knows if some of these alleged perpetrators are local, but I went ahead and put the press release, the plea for attention from the public by the Milford Police Department because of what happened a few days ago at Walnut Beach. So there is video up there, that video, and you will see if you watch it, there is a timestamp in the upper right-hand corner of some of these videos, and you may say, what the heck is that? Well, that's because you're watching video from a police body cam. And that police body cam was pulled off or ripped off some Milford police officers who were trying, as cops often do, men and women in blue, trying to calm a melee on Walnut Beach the other day. So, again, if you have any suspicion as to who those folks might be, they're clearly visible with talking and everything. So, again, you don't know exactly who they are, whether they're area kids or whatever, but the Milford Police Department did post that video late yesterday, so I went ahead and last night put it on our Facebook page, and check it out, facebook.com/WICC600, and this is when you and I can be the eyes and the ears of the local police department and see if you recognize anyone. Now, I'm sure, I was talking about this with somebody before I stepped into the studio here, look, police and law enforcement, they have facial recognition software. They all do. And I don't know specifically what's going on here, but, you know, you say, well, how would you find somebody? Oh, believe me, they can. Believe me, they can. So we'll see what happens with this. It's just an ugly scene on Walnut Beach the other day. And, you know, we'll see what happens there in Milford and what the police department does, what the mayor does, and you know, how to calm the fears. See, that's primarily what the problem is now. It's not a criticism of the beach. It's not a criticism of regular citizens. But, you know, it's a criticism to the fact that, you know, if people don't feel safe. You know, I discussed this with local leaders for years and years and years. The number one, and again, I'm not pointing fingers here to anybody with this. No, we're not finger pointing here at all. I mean, who knew this was going to happen? But if it happens once, you know, then people know. And especially now with social media, if it happens once, people say, well, okay, now, you know, sometimes it's not an easy thing to ask. But now, you know, XX mayor or XX town or XX, you know, police department, not necessarily Milford, but anywhere. What are you going to do to make sure, or if you can't do that, at least lower the chance that this may happen again? What is your civic duty, your civic responsibility to make sure that doesn't happen again? All right? So you can check that out. Please give a look at it. It's quite startling to watch. And again, the reason that video there has a time stamp on it in some of the videos, because there are youngins, the future leaders of America, there on that video, who are passing around a police body cam. Oh, look what we have. That's not a good idea, boys and girls. Hate to tell you, you may have to lawyer up. Mom and Dad probably have to hire a local barrister for some legal advice because the crown won't be happy. Oh, my God. I watched that video last night. I said, are you kidding me? You have got to be kidding me on this. Give it a look. Go to our Facebook page. Entertain yourselves. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. We'll get to the calls momentarily. The other thing I put on the Facebook page, and I want your thoughts on this, you legal, law-abiding, non-psycho, non-criminal gun owners, because the White House now is having to clean up a mess from Joe Biden on handguns. And this is why, I don't care whether it's Democrat or Republican or left-wing or right-wing, clam up sometimes. Remember when Archie used to say, ye stifle? Sometimes that's a good idea, especially when you're dealing with delicate issues like gun control or gun safety. Now they're trying to pass it off and reframe it, which I think is smart to call them gun safety measures. Handgun sales are limited to those 21 and over. Should there be any additional federal limits on such sales? Now, remember, the feds say the minimum age for a handgun purchase is 21. But you can buy a rifle at 18, and this is the controversy that we were talking about yesterday. And the reason I put this up there is that the White House has had to clarify. That's never a good idea. When somebody has to clarify remarks of a president, I don't care whether it's Donald Trump on the right side, Lord knows we had to go through that, or Joe Biden on the left side. When you've got to clarify remarks, that's not good. What am I talking about? The White House said today, this version of it from the New York Post, the White House said today, Tuesday, that President Biden does not support a Canada-style ban on handgun sales in the wake of the pair of mass shootings last month. The latest example of a White House member having to clear up the boss's remarks. Yes, and by the way, I don't know whether you saw this. Justin Trudeau in Canada is calling a halt to basically all private gun sales, not just long rifles and guns, which are hard to get in Canada, but handguns as well. Think that would fly here? No, sir. Karine Jean-Pierre said, we'll leave it up to other countries to set their policy on gun ownership. Well, isn't that big of you, Karine? Thank you. The president has made his position clear. The U.S. needs to act. As I just laid out, he supports a ban on the sale of assault weapons and high-capacity magazines and expanded background checks to keep guns out of dangerous hands. He does not support a ban on the sale of all handguns, to answer your question. And that question came from Fox's Peter Ducey, who asked, quote, Canada is making it impossible to buy, sell, transfer, or import handguns from anywhere in that country. Would President Biden ever consider a similar restriction on handguns here? So there you go. The president had earlier suggested there should be restrictions on the 9mm pistol, the most popular handgun in the U.S. He said, quote, they said a .22 caliber bullet will lodge in the lung and we could probably get it out again. The president was referring to, discussions he had with some trauma surgeons. The president told reporters outside the site of the mass shooting in Texas. He then said, quote, a 9mm bullet blows the lung out of the body. To which some people said, well, no, it really doesn't. What are you talking about? So again, as I've said, sometimes it's better to say nothing, or it's better just to be very careful what you say. You don't want to have, you know, rhetorical messes have to be cleaned up. So a couple things on the table here. You've got my question and all the controversy now, the White House walking back things that the president may or may not have meant regarding handguns and possible limitations on handguns, saying that a 9mm handgun can blow somebody's lung out. Can it? I don't know. You tell me. I've never shot anybody. I'm not a nut. I've never shot anybody in the chest or otherwise. You tell me. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. And or feelings on what happened at Walnut Beach in Milford the other day. I don't go to beaches. I haven't been to a beach in 20, 25, 30 years. Now, very fair skin, that's one thing. But I just look, nothing against beaches. Nothing against town or city beaches. But the older I get, the less contact I want with people. I sit far away. I observe. It's like going to a game at Yankee Stadium or Citi Field or Fenway Park. I'll be in my little corner, my little seat, and I'll observe. Stay away from the water. Stay away from the booze. Get me some shade. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. We kick it off today with handgun concerns, the White House cleaning up a mess, and also folks in the area not happy with what happened at a beach in Milford the other day. What are your thoughts? Our next guest, very, very well-known, a well-known legal analyst. You've seen her for years, NPR, NBC, Fox, CNN. But she's also a prolific author. I mean, a lot of books. This one is called A Spy in Plain Sight, The Inside Story of the FBI and Robert Hansen, America's Most Damaging Russian Spy. Some of you may remember this case, others may not. You may say, yeah, I kind of remember that. Well, it was a big one, and joining us right now is Lise Wheel on the program. Lise, hi, it's Paul at WICC. How are you?
Hi, Paul. It's great to be with you.
Did I read on your website, was I correct, 20 books? I mean, did you really? That's amazing, Lise. I can't put two words together. No, honestly, I mean, they pay me to flap my gums here, but boy, you must really love writing.
I do. I mean, it's a discipline, right? It's a job. It's a lot of work, but it's also fun, and especially when you get to go, you know, work on such an exciting topic as Robert Hansen and try to piece together, you know, history and to make it sort of tell it in kind of a thriller way, which is what I try to do with my nonfiction. So yeah. You learn something, but you have fun with it too.
Yeah, I can imagine the discipline. Yeah, now it's about Robert Hansen, and you call it America's Most Damaging Russian Spy. And Lisa, I've kind of read about this story on and off the years, and there are all these other spy rings. But yeah, from what I read and presently and in years past, this one was a real whopper. Talk to my listeners about who Hansen is, how did this happen, and what did we or did we not know?
Sure. He grew up kind of an unremarkable upbringing, really, in Chicago. He had a father that was very hard on him. I would think we would call it child abuse now. But he graduated, and he was able to get into the FBI, which is really the, you know, his heart's desire. But within a year of his joining the FBI, he approaches the Russians. I mean, they don't flip him. He goes to them and lets them know that he doesn't say who he is or that he's an FBI agent, but he says he's got this information for them. Really good intel if you're the Russians and you want to get spies that are working for us. And he starts delivering that information and does so for 20 years before the FBI catches up with him and discovers him and arrests him.
Wow, 20 years. Any specific reason, Lise, why it took so long? Was Hansen that good? Was he not suspected? What was the dynamic here?
He really wasn't that great a spy in the sense he was sloppy. You know, he'd do things like hack into his a colleague's computer at the FBI. But the FBI was sloppy, too, because when that happened, for example, they said, oh, you know, what's going on, Hansen? Why'd you hack into your, you know, an FBI agent computer? And he says, well, because I'm trying to show you how frail the system is and the fallibilities of our system, and I can fix them because I'm the computer guy, the IT guy. And they said, oh, okay, fine, no problem.
You know, wait a minute, wait. So somebody actually bought that?
Yeah. Yeah, because they found him to be kind of creepy and a little weird and very, you know, kind of geeky, but not spy material. They didn't see him as that. They just thought that he was a little bit odd, you know, a little off. But, you know, there's Robert Hansen fixing the computers and doing things like that. So they let him go for all these years.
Wow. What type of information, Lise Wheel, was he funneling to the Russians?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, the first communique was about a guy that we called Polyakov. That's his last name. And he was a Russian asset for us that was giving us, you know, top good information. He sent the Russians the identity of this asset. The Russians promptly pick him up, execute him in the most heinous of ways, and then they videotape that to deter other, you know, would-be agents. And that's just the beginning of it. The damage, the dollar damage was put at about $10 billion with a B back in, you know, this is now 20 years ago, so 20-year ago money. But in addition to that, you know, he costs lives. Polyakov was the first, and there were others to follow. And I don't really think you can put, you know, a dollar value on that. It was incalculable, the damage that he caused. And, you know, the subtitle is the most American, you know, damaging spy we've ever had. That's not me. That's what the Department of Justice said, that this is a guy that really hurt the U.S. as much as any spy has.
Talking with noted legal analyst and prolific author Lee Sweel. Lee, hang on. We'll be right back with you. The name of the book is A Spy in Plain Sight, the inside story of the FBI and Robert Hansen, America's most damaging Russian spy. Remember that one, folks? Think about it. Yes, you remember that in the news, don't you? More with Lee Sweel coming up. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Back to open phones in just a bit. First, though, a few more fascinating minutes with well-known legal analyst and attorney Lee Sweel. You've watched her work on television for years. Also a very prolific author. Her 20th book, A Spy in Plain Sight, the inside story of the FBI and Robert Hansen, America's most damaging Russian spy. Lise, why did he do it? Why does some, I mean, people like you and I wouldn't dream of committing treason. And I know treason is technically wartime, but being treasonous toward my country. Why did he and do other people do this?
You know, it's complex. Obviously, money is a big part of it. And Hansen needed money. He was a devout Catholic, went to Opus, you know, even Opus Dei, went to Mass every day. Had a bunch of kids that were in parochial school. And so he needed to, you know, I had bills to pay. And when he was in the FBI, they first moved around to New York and then D.C. And he wanted to live in the nicest of suburbs. So he needed the money. But that wasn't all of it. His oldest and best friend told me that he had a James Bond, you know, fixation since he was a kid. Hmm. And that was part of it, the glamour, the, you know, the glory of the James Bondian kind of thing. And also, he was, honestly, he was a disgruntled employee. He felt like he was the smartest guy in the room. He was smarter than all the other agents around him. And they didn't appreciate him enough. The FBI didn't. And so when the Russians opened their arms to him, they were full of flowery, you know, back and forth in the letters and, you know, so appreciative of his brilliance and all of that. So you put those things together and you've got a narcissistic guy who doesn't feel appreciated, needs money, and loves glamour. And you put all that together, and you have the motivations for Robert Hansen.
So any word as to how much he actually made from Moscow? Was it all money? Was there a honeypot involved? Were there cars, property? How much did he make off of this?
There was a money involved and diamonds at one point because he wanted that. And he was paying for everything in cash for years. But let me just put it this way. He made much, much less than the $7 million we paid to a Russian asset who gave us finally the information we needed to crack the case on Hansen. That guy got paid $7 million and is in witness protection somewhere here in this country. So he made money, but it wasn't, you know, in the millions.
Wow. Lee Sweel, so that leads me to my next question. What happened? How was this case cracked?
Yeah, well, we first got the information we needed from this Russian asset who gave it over an audio cassette where the FBI was able to identify Hansen's voice on the audio cassette speaking to his Russian handler. And so that was the tip the FBI needed to say, hey, it's Hansen, not somebody else. And they looked at him, but Hansen at that point was only 3 or 4 months, excuse me, from retirement.
Wow.
Mandatory retirement. So they had to set up a whole sting operation and get this guy. I mean, it was pretty complicated at the time. But once the FBI finally figured out who it was, then they sprang into action and did a pretty good job.
Was he surprised he was caught, or was he expecting it? Because I know sometimes these people, they ride this run for as long as they can, and in the end they say, well, you got me. What was his reaction?
You know, that was so fascinating. At the end, when they captured him, and he was making a final drop for the Russians, and so they caught him red-handed, he said, what took you so long?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. In other words, he kind of had to always be, again, the smartest guy, you know, saying the FBI was kind of dumb, you know, what took you so long? But also, maybe he was in a weird way, you know, psychologically expecting it at some point and maybe even relieved.
So I know it's difficult to encapsulate this without going into great detail, but how bad was this for the U.S.? You talked about some of our assets, obviously, and those are very hard to cultivate and to get double agents right. And all this. But how crippling was this? In what specific areas were there influencers, nuclear weapons, flows of stuff we got, intel, Signet, and all this? How bad was this?
But really bad. I mean, you hit it. He said... He gave them nuclear information, right, about our nuclear plans. He gave them information about where the president and vice president would be at different times. So if they wanted to, you know, attack them, they could. They would know the whereabouts. I mean, he really gave the Russians, you can imagine, 20 years of being in the FBI at some point at the highest level, you know, of our counter-espionage focused on Russia department. So he had all the information, all the intel. And because he was the computer guy at the FBI or one of the major computer guys, he not only had access to his own unit, but he got access to everything that was going on in the FBI and turned that over to the Russians little by little. And you could imagine that dribbling, you know, for 20 years was extensive and very, very damaging.
So I see he's, what, 78 now, and he is 15 life sentences. I don't think he's getting out. Did you get to speak with him or not?
No. Per his plea agreement, neither he nor his wife can speak to anybody. And that makes sense because, right, they still have top secret information, and so the FBI doesn't want him speaking to anybody. But he's in, you know, 23-hour-a-day confinement,
wow.
Solitary confinement. So the 1 hour a day he gets out, you know, he can kind of cohort with the Unabomber and Al Chapo, some of the nice guys that are there with him in Colorado.
Oh, can you imagine that dinner table, that lunch table? Oh, my God. Oh, boy.
Well, you know, they all think they're the smartest people in the room.
Yeah.
You know, they just can't be taken down until they are, finally.
Boy, finally, Lise, what you must have would have given to just, even with a government official there making sure he didn't say anything, just to ask him general questions. Boy, it's too bad you couldn't do that. Even if they could limit it to say, okay, just personal issues, nothing classified, but they won't even do that, huh?
They won't even do that. I mean, I understand that they could have executed this guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a, you know, spying on your country could get you executed here. So he's, I'm sure, just happy that he's, you know, in the solitary confinement. He's still married to his wife. She never divorced him, which is kind of incredible. But,
yeah.
You know, she still gets his pension. So maybe that's part of it.
Oh, okay.
So he's there rotting away, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, no, I think most of us are. And finally, Lisa, isn't the logic of maybe keeping people like him alive is that, hey, you never know what he might tell us. It might take years, but if he's still alive and near the end, he might. It's almost like these mafia guys who talk, you know, on their deathbed.
Exactly. And at that point when they arrested him, he said, look, I'll give you any information. I just don't want you to charge my wife. And
okay.
So he seemed to actually care about her. But who knows? With a guy like that, you just never know what their emotions are. He never really expressed any remorse or contrition for, you know, causing the death of these Russian assets. And here's this guy who portrays himself as a devout Catholic by day. And then by night, he's doing spying on his country.
Sad story in the end. A spy in plain sight, the inside story of the FBI and Robert Hansen, America's most damaging Russian spy. Lise Wheel has been the guest. Lise, thank you. It's been fascinating, and hopefully we can chat in the future. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Thanks,
Lise.
Bye-bye. Yep.